We're going to open the Committee on House Administration, and we're going to rearrange the order just a little bit because of some people who aren't quite able to get here. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2943, and we're going to open a public hearing on H.J.R. 53, because as you'll find out, they kind of have comparisons. They go together as a pair, and that allows people to speak to both bills when they come to the up to talk. So with that, we'll have a short explanation, and then we'll have the sponsors of the legislation. They can actually move up to the desk if they would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First measure, House Bill 2943, creates a legislative research office. That measure has a subsequent referral of Ways and Means. The second measure, House Joint Resolution 53, directs the State Board of Higher Education to review potential for focusing higher education resources to assist state government and to report to the Legislative Assembly.
And just before we get started, I want to also note that we opened the hearing. As you can tell, we don't have a quorum at this point, but we can take, for the purpose of taking testimony, and we have our two bills in public hearing right now. So with that, I will turn it over to whoever wants to go first, second, or third.
Let me go first. Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent North and Northeast Portland in District 43 in the Oregon House of Representatives. And I come to you bringing House Joint Resolution 53 and encouraging you to consider it and pass it so that we could have a discussion in this body about how to best use the resources from the Oregon University system in higher education more generally to help us solve some of the more vexing policy problems that we have in this state. As you may know, we have about 16 different policy institutes in statute, the majority of which either A, were never funded, or if they were funded at one time, have lost their funding over time. And you may, depending on which committee you sit in, hear from time to time about the research from the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. And they do policy research on everything from education to natural resource development, economic development issues. And it's a legislative research body that has a bipartisan board of directors as well as the chancellors of most of the major Washington universities on that board. And when the legislature says, we want you to go find an answer to this question, for example, they did a study on how Washington might be able to slow the growth of its prison system through investments in evidence-based programs and like functional family therapy and other high-value programs that could improve foster care or reduce recidivism or enhance early childhood outcomes and hopefully slow the growth of prisons. They've also done some very impressive work on K-12 education. And so what I found interesting about that approach is that they'd never codified their institute in statute. What they said is we're going to provide a core budget for this institute in the OUS budget, and if it's useful to the legislature, they'll continue to fund it. If it's not useful and the legislature as a body doesn't find it productive, then the funding could go away. The other benefit of that is that I think a lot of times we end up doing research by budget note around here, or we do research by taking basically at face value what the executive branch provides to us. And while I think there's just needs to be a recognition that there, if you're going to do research, you need to fund it. And the way they've done it in Washington is they provide this core budget of about four or five staff, and if the legislature wants an answer to a question that's going to take 2 or 3 years to figure out, then through the agency or through some other mechanism, then they add an additional funding block for this study. And it could go out to, then they could the Institute contracted out. But Steve Ose will be talking more about the history of that entity. How they started was in 1983 was just a resolution saying that it's important for us to maximize the use of higher ed. And that is basically what we did is we thought YMS was success. And what we did is took a look at their resolution and basically copied it, made it the language a little more applicable to Oregon. And this will give us an opportunity to share with you some of the research from Washington, which I think my staff has brought and disseminated to you, as well as their board of directors. And so I think I'll leave it at that, since Mr. Ose will explain more about what the Washington Institute does, and I'll let my colleagues comment, and then we'll go to Mr. Ose.
Do you want to follow?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing House Joint Resolution 53. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22. I come before you today in support of this resolution because I believe it will add an immeasurable value to our Oregon State Legislature. Turning to our institutions of higher learning to assist us with research on public policy will add a nonpartisan, objective, and diverse skill set to our policy process. I can tell you firsthand experience that the research we do often falls upon our legislative staff. As talented as they are, it is often difficult to find the time to do the detailed work and that takes to cover everything. Additionally, we often do this research in the interim, and like this session, the economic and social climate we are presented with in October has dramatically changed. And so by the time we are looking at these bills, we may need some continued adjustments. Turning to policy analysis, the specialists from our institutions of higher learning means we will utilize a group of individuals who have research as their main focus. I think that's one of the best pieces. They're focused. They know what this looks like and how much time it takes to research a good piece of information. Applying this knowledge and focus to our policy work will help expedite our process and ensure our bills come through with the research and background required to implement effective legislation and efficiently. Those of us know right now we're battling with amendment after amendment because we want to make sure we have it right, but we just didn't have the foundation to do it from the beginning. Above all, this bill represents an opportunity to give our communities a stronger voice in their legislative process. Around the state, our institutions of higher learning attract individuals from every walk of life, from rural and urban areas, from all socioeconomic backgrounds, and from diverse communities from all ages. This would be an opportunity for them to share their gifts with us as a legislative body and to our state. And this is something that I think would be very helpful to us and has worked well in Washington State. And the education research wonk in me says this is something that would be helpful to all 90 members. So with that, I support this legislation. Thank you for your time.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Hannah. I appreciate you giving this both of these measures a hearing this morning. I've introduced House Bill 2943, which is a little bit of a different approach, this same issue from a different angle. This bill is essentially it's a reintroduction of a bill that was introduced last session following the recommendations of the Public Commission on the Legislature that was formed by the 05 legislature to make recommendations for how the legislative branch can be improved institutionally. And one of the recommendations is to one of the shortcomings identified in the legislative institution currently is a deficiency in nonpartisan, professional, objective policy analysis to help legislators do their job. And the analogy essentially is, why can we not do for policy what we currently do for fiscal and revenue matters, where we have a professional staff to provide nonpartisan research and analysis to guide members in their deliberations about fiscal and revenue policy? Why can we not do the same thing for policy analysis? Why do policy issues have to be filtered through the partisan caucus offices? Why must we rely on primarily stakeholders to provide information about what the effects of legislation would be? Why should we rely on the executive branch and agency input to provide policy research analysis. We need our own resources. And so this proposal would establish a legislative research office to provide that. It has obvious fiscal implications, and I introduced the measure this session knowing that it would not be feasible to try and set up funding for a new legislative office this session. And so as I was thinking about how we could approach this, I thought a logical way to amend the bill would be to, or a logical way to ameliorate the funding problems with the bill would be to draw on existing resources in the university system in the state. And that's when I, around the same time, learned that Representatives Shield and Comp have been working on this proposal in HJR 53 to do just that, to draw on the resources we have in our OUS system. And so I think that's exactly the right path to be on, and I would suggest that if there's interest on the committee in moving forward with this, an appropriate amendment to House Bill 2943 would be, rather than to create the office through this legislation this session, perhaps to task the Legislative Administration Committee or a subgroup of that committee with developing a plan for implementation of such an office in conjunction with the university system, as HJR 53 is recommending, and to bring back to the next legislative session essentially a concept, a plan for how we can accomplish this.
Okay. Questions for this panel? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Apologize for being late to the committee. And who has control over this office? Because it is clear that this office obviously could be used to, you know, research is sometimes in the eye of the beholder, and so it could be used as a partisan tool, and I don't think that's how our legislative offices are used today, revenue and fiscal. And so, you know, how do we avoid that, or do they operate essentially under the same mantra or guise or philosophy? Just comments.
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I'm not sure if my staff got you this document. Is that in any of the materials that you have regarding the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, their bylaws?
Maybe.
You did kill some trees, but not with that one.
unless it's in this Washington State Institute of Public Policy.
I don't think I did get you this, but I'll pass this around. For the Washington State Institute, there's also, and I'll also pass around the Board of Directors list, what you have is an equal number of Republicans and Democrats from both chambers, as well as some of the research people from their university system. And then also within here, you'll see the decision-making process regarding governance. And basically what they do is the board decides on what research questions to undertake as a board with equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats.
If I can add to that, Mr. Chair and Representative Maurer, I think that's exactly the right question to ask. My vision for how this should work is that this would be my concern is that this not be a creature that responds only to legislative leadership. It needs to be a resource available to all 90 members. And unlike, for example, take by contrast the Oregon Law Commission, which does an outstanding job, but they take their legislative cues essentially from leadership. And that's a workflow management tool. And my interest is in making sure that we have a resource available to all of us, and as much during the interim as during sessions, so that as we're working on legislative proposals and questions arise about, you know, what data is current? I mean, there are volumes of data out there that we don't have right now easy access to. And I think having a coordinating body in the building to help legislators understand what's available out there and where the gaps are could be very useful.
And follow up to that, is prioritizing the request, because my assumption is that there would be, I mean, probably as many requests as there are members in this body, times 10, and that they would have to prioritize, because in order to do any of them well, you have to prioritize. And I see that the board actually sets the priorities. And I guess maybe answer my own question, but how do you envision the prioritization process to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I think that's a very good question. I think, unfortunately, the way things operate now is that individual legislators often send the executive branch members scrambling to answer questions. And so particularly if somebody is a chair of a committee that, you know, is particularly influential, say, for example, overseeing the budget of that particular agency, they feel obligated to go spend time and resources to answer that question. I think that's not the best way to go about making that kind of research fair. So I think that the added bonus to this is that you would have a bipartisan structure making those decisions.
And I would add, Mr. Chair and Representative Maurer, that you can imagine different types of requests. I've talked with some folks in the research world about Portland State, for example, about how this might work. There are questions that could be answered in 10 or 15 minutes of research because the people would understand, would know right away where to find those answers. Other questions could take months to figure out. There would have to be some kind of filtering mechanism so that, I mean, ideally, all 90 members would have the ability to access this office and obtain quick answers to those types of questions that can be answered quickly. For the more involved, long-term kinds of projects, there would have to be some kind of workflow management tool. I don't know exactly how that should work, but I think that would be an appropriate topic of any kind of feasibility study.
Further follow-up?
Yeah, one suggestion, it may be in there, is the interface between the legislator or the legislative staff and this office, that it would be, is a mechanism to educate our staff on how they can help themselves do research on their own, so that, you know, you're leveraging the skills of this research office to, so they aren't having to field every single question. But is there an educational component or a collaboration component between the staff of the legislature and this research?
Chair Roblin, Representative Maurer, I think you're asking a really great question, because when right now our base of information for many bills and things that come before us is the voice of a lobbyist that has paid somebody to do research. And so what this would have to be, there would have to be that understanding that whether it's, what is good research? People do not understand, many people do not understand what is good annotated, good qualified research. It's not like you can just go out and grab somebody's statement and say, well, we ought to do this because... And so I think that would be one of the key components, is that it gives us a better understanding of what is good research.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I've got to go vote in Ways and Means. But I think the great thing about this is that Washington has been doing this for 17 years, and Steve Ose from the Institute, we're calling in to have him kind of talk about the history. Before I go, in case this takes longer than I had anticipated, I just want to let you know we've had OUS and most of the universities at the table for two or three meetings as we flush this out. OUS can talk about their views of it. And essentially they're concerned of funding, of course, that if we that if they are told to embark upon something, that we actually make the resources available.
And Mr. Chair, I'll be back right away too.
Okay. The one question I had for you, though, before you leave, and because you dealt with the HJR 53, I have not seen, and I think I talked to Representative Comp about this, I have not seen House Joint Resolution that instructed somebody to do something, as opposed to requested, cajoled, asked, pleaded, whatever. But this one actually directs, and to me, I don't know that that is in a proper place here, that the legislative branch is directing affecting a different branch of government, whether we can do that or not. So it's just a question with regard to the drafting.
The mechanics. If I could answer, Mr. Chair, we had this redrafted to make sure that the language in the bill, and it's perhaps not as clear in the summary, but if you look lines 11 through 14, it talks about the Department of Higher Ed conduct a review rather than a report. And so what the intent is that they not, you know, write a 35-page annotated report, but that they simply come back to the legislative body in the next biennium and just testify about how they'd like to see this proceed.
Okay. And then the other question, that, and I can, Representative Garrett can answer this so you guys can go. And that one has to do, I think we have in, over the last couple sessions, the quality and expertise of our committee administrators continues to rise along the same line, so that and I speak mostly natural resources, we see a greater and greater amount of individual academic knowledge in the field of which the administrator is helping. And I see a general direction of having some of this research capacity within the legislative administration, so it's like Representative Maurer's question. Not only are legislative people having the help to do it, but I think we now have in place people who are able to do some of that research and help, which may alleviate the issue of having all the questions go instantly to this topic group.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. Many of these questions, particularly during the interim, are things that even with a reduced committee staff during the interim could be resolved and disposed of relatively quickly. And I think, obviously, the committee staff would be working in close collaboration with, if we were to establish such an office. But the details of how these individuals and offices should interact, I think, has by no means been worked out.
Okay.
But it would be part of, if we're going to have a group look into this over the next biennium, I think that would be exactly the issue to look into.
Okay, thank you. So do we want to call our person? Or we
certainly can.
We can ask any questions, and that would probably be helpful. Yes, question of Representative Maurer.
Well, are you, Representative Garrett, are you leaving?
I was intending to, but I can stay.
Well, I find this interesting. One of the things we're really good at is we ask in bills for a report to come back to the Legislative Assembly, and we get volumes of stuff that, quite frankly, you know, is quite useless, doesn't tell us anything. And it, you know, I don't know if there is a, you know, when we ask for that information in bills, the repository isn't necessarily File 13, you know, the round cylinder or the recycle can, but is the there has to be a collection agency, and this, again, this might be the place where they are the essentially the library for that kind of document to reside, so it can be readily accessed. One of the problems that we hear over and over again is the lack of strength of we have abdicated a lot of our responsibility and our power to the executive branch, and you know, they've got 40 some odd thousand people out there that essentially are their staff, and besides providing services, and we don't have that. And so this, you know, these tools could be very useful in allowing us to make good policy decisions.
Thank you very much. We'll call.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
You can wait or however you want.
I have another meeting, so if it's all right, I'd like to excuse myself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Steve Oaks.
I'm not sure how he did that pronunciation.
I know.
I'm glad they said like this.
This is Steve Oaks.
Hello, Steve. This is Representative Arnie Roblin. I'm the chair of the House Administration Committee.
Hi.
And thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I guess the big question is we would like to have a better understanding of how the system in Washington works.
Sure.
And so I'll leave it and let you say what you need.
Okay. So the you want me to just give a little bit of background of
sure.
to how we work for the legislature and how it uses this and so on.
Yeah, including how it remains a bipartisan usability if that's a part of the system and how all that works.
Yeah, that really is a key part of the system in my judgment. That it, the reason why it was set up in 1983, and I think the reason why it's still going and being used more than ever is because it is seen by both parties as being a place where you can go to get reliable information for a question. So the institute it was set up, and it was decided to have an institute in the state of Washington. The resolution is very similar to the one that I just saw here, your joint resolution 53. The way it actually worked in Washington, we had an almost identical resolution. We asked one of the bodies in Washington State to produce Council of Post-Secondary Education at the time to produce, come up with a recommendation that the legislature asked them in a joint resolution. That council didn't respond with a recommendation, and so the 1983 legislature just decided to do it anyway, and they just set up the initial institute at the local state college here in Olympia. So that's sort of the history of how the institute got started. There was a joint resolution similar to yours. The agency didn't respond, and then the legislature the following session decided to do it on its own volition. We all of the assignments that we get come to us via legislation. So right now our legislature's got in both the House and the Senate budgets. There are a number of new assignments for the institute, and all the nouns and verbs directing the studies are signed into law, and then the governor signs it, and off we go. So we don't do any work for executive agencies, unless occasionally an executive agency will ask the institute to do something, in which case we take it to our board of directors for approval if it's over $5,000 worth of work. So our board is it's 10 members from the legislative branch of government, 8 elected members, 4 from the House, 4 from the Senate, and equal D's and R's in both bodies. And there's a co-chair. There's always a co-chair with a Democrat and a Republican as co-chair. So members, I think legislative members, when they come on the institute, they know it's nonpartisan, and it just sort of run that way. It's an informal thing. One important thing to note, I think, about the institute, and it's something I like about it, is that it's not a statutory agency. When it was created, it was not written into statute that, in Washington there's an institute for public policy and so on. We just exist because we exist. And so if the legislature decides the institute's not giving it good information, it just won't write any of those new bills, and at which time the institute would either would shrink back to just a director and an assistant director, 2 people, because the college provides that base funding. And I suppose if we didn't get any new assignments, we probably just would disappear altogether. But that keeps, in my judgment, that keeps the institute on its toes. It makes sure that we're being responsive to the legislature, that we're not off out there doing our own thing or anything like that. It's just clearly, are we giving information that's useful? And if we are, then typically some assignments come to us the following session. I think it's been very successful. I think if you talk to members here, I sort of keep an informal poll during the course of a session of how often we're mentioned by members in floor debates and in committees and even in bills, how often our name, will come into a bill on child welfare or juvenile justice or K-12 education or whatever, and we'll say, based upon the finding from the Institute for Public Policy on blah, 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 we want to move in this direction and that kind of thing. So I keep a poll on that, and we've been able to do it pretty well. I think there is a role for this kind of a nonpartisan group. We can't handle a lot of questions, so if we get a bill that has us doing an assignment that can only be seen through partisan eyes, then I have to go up and try to tell that member that that's probably not a study that the institute can do, and that's just the way it works. And sometimes that doesn't go over that well. It's one of the hardest parts of my job, when I have to do that, and occasionally I have to get one of our board members, usually from the same caucus, to go, and also, if that board member agrees, that's not a good study for the Institute. So we try to get the ones where you can do a fiscal analysis, a cost-benefit analysis of where do taxpayers get the best return on their dollar in education or in crime or child welfare or something like that. Those are the kinds of studies that seem to work the best for this kind of an operation.
Okay. Questions? So, as I understand it then, this is not kind of a general research institute that would help members kind of get ready for a session and so on. This is one that they have thought through it, they've come to a conclusion that they believe they want to go in a certain direction or not, and they put in the bill so that for the next session they're going to have the answers that they need to proceed.
That's correct. I don't think any individual member has ever called us up. It's not that they would be prohibited from that. It's just that it's never been the expectation that we would do that. That's really what committee staff are for. I might mention in that regard that this institute works best when it works with the committee staff. We have nonpartisan committee staff in both the House and the Senate, and we work best when we work directly with them. So we're right downtown in Olympia. We see committee staff all the time. When we get an assignment, we meet with committee staff to make sure that the studies, you know, so they can track the progress of the studies, because they're the ones ultimately that if a member wants to write a bill as a result of the study, the staff will be the ones that often will draft the initial bill from our work. We don't do bill drafting here. So it's an integral part of our job, and I tell all the people that work here to make sure that what we're doing is, you know, out in the open and everyone knows what's going on.
So is, how was I going to ask this question? I'm going blank right now. So
did you get some information on our budget size and all that stuff?
I think we did, but I don't have it right in front of me. So,
the local state college here, Evergreen State College, which is the one right in Olympia, the institute was set up as what's called a public service center of the college, and the college uses tuition dollars to fund a director and an assistant director and a support staff. And that's the core of the institute. There'd also be a little bit of room in there for some additional research or contracted research. And that's typically about $500,000 a year, possibly $600,000. It's being reduced now with the budget crunch. So it's about $500,000 a year. And then, as I said, all the other assignments during a session, when there's when a member writes a bill or if it's part of a budget bill, we will then submit a fiscal note on what we think it costs to do the bill, and then, of course, the bills either pass or don't pass, and the money's either attached or not attached. And typically, during my 15 years here, we've been pretty consistent, right around and the total budget then for the institute is right about $1.5 million per year. So on top of the $500,000, typically is about $1 million a year. Versus for new studies that come through the legislature. And as I mentioned, they've been in a variety of areas, K-12 education, higher education, early childhood education, criminal justice, juvenile justice, substance child welfare, and substance abuse, and that's mental health, that kind of stuff. So it's been in a number of areas.
Okay. Representative Maurer.
Thank you. What is your background and the background of your immediate staff?
What was of which staff did you?
Your immediate staff. Oh, so I'll be the other person.
Well, I'm an economist, and I've been working in and around Olympia. It kind of reveals my age a little bit, but for about 34 years now. So I've been a lot of different roles here in Olympia, staff roles, and for different groups in town here. And so, and most of the people that we try to hire here, that come to work here, first of all, they have to know that their jobs are not secure, they're not long-term, it's just, do we bring there's no new studies, everyone has to go away, so they're all on soft money, as they call it. But I try to hire people that are technically competent and that know how things work in Olympia. That combination is a rare skill, a rare combination, and some have it more than others. But, you know, we're not doing academic research, we're not publishing studies and journals and all that stuff. We're doing real-time research for real-time legislators that have to deal with real-world problems. So that's a different kind of skills than you would find at a typical university, I think, and it requires a different kind of a mentality. I try to tell people that when they come here, if it needs to be seen, it is a nonpartisan group. I tell people if you have to have bumper stickers, political bumper stickers on your car, the Institute's not the best place for you to work because it's a small town, as is Salem, and if you're seen as being in one party or another, aligned one way or another, not just sticking to the numbers, then that the Institute's credibility goes down. So that's something that I pay particular attention to as we do our work.
I remembered my question, thank you again, and that has to do with, do you make actual recommendations that say, here's the course we think is the best, or do you generally write it like so many research papers that I've seen that we write that give a series of options that you could probably pick, sometimes in order of which you think are best or not, but oftentimes just here from our research, here are options you have available to you.
Yeah. So the first thing I do I'm a real big fan of verbs, and
okay.
So when a legislator writes a study bill for the Institute, I look immediately at what the verbs are, and if we're told to recommend things, then that's what we do in the study. Typically, we're typically asked to do more options. You know, here's an example. I mean, we could get some actual language here, but there'd be things like, what does research indicate is the best way to reduce crime rates in the state of Washington? And what ways get the most out of taxpayer dollars? So it doesn't say tell us what to do, but on the other hand, we come up with a list and we rank things according to the crime effect per taxpayer dollar spent kind of thing. And so there's an implied, I suppose, recommendation there. Sometimes we get asked to make specific recommendations, and then we do that. So it's whatever comes out of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? I personally want to thank you for taking your time to share with us, because it certainly clarified in my head. I think I had a more large scope in mind, and I was having a difficult time, as a couple members were, and how do we narrow down the focus. This gave me a really good understanding of how it works there.
Yeah,
so
I will just, if I could,
sure, please.
Just add one thing that I think is, in my perspective here, has been one of the reasons why the Institute is used by the legislature, and it's seen as not as helpful to both parties, is that we're local. The longer I've been doing this, after all these decades, the more you realize that you need to be here to do this stuff. You don't. I encourage other states, and I've mentioned this in Oregon as well, that have asked about how the Institute's set up. I think if we were up in Seattle at the University of Washington, I don't think we would be as effective as we are by actually being here. There's something about being here where the decisions are actually made and the legislators actually debate the issues, and being part of that scene, that's something that I think is very important. Otherwise, you end up being staffed by tenured faculty at universities, and I don't think that's the kind of I just don't think that would work as well as what's happened here. So I would encourage if your group comes back with you with recommendations for the resolution, that you try to set something up locally. It might be through a university, but try to make sure that it's actually in Salem. I think it's very important to have that function there.
I appreciate that. And the other question that I have is, are you at Evergreen or are you at a different state school or a private school?
No, we're right downtown. I mean, the budget goes through Evergreen State College, which is about 8 miles away from the Capitol.
Yep.
But we're, our offices are right in view of the Capitol.
Okay. Any last questions? Seeing none. Thank you again very much for joining us.
Great. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We don't have anyone else on the list to talk, though we do have people. Oh, come on up. We do have people from OUS, and we also have our own staff, if any questions of people. So, and identify yourself for the record, and thanks for being here.
Certainly. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Panero. I'm with the Oregon University System, representing the Office of the Chancellor. As Representative Shield indicated, we had had a couple of meetings with him and Representative Comp to discuss this as a concept. We laud the idea. I think it's very valuable for the legislature to have a research arm that they can depend on to answer either quick and dirty kind of questions or the longer-term type of research on public policy issues. As a matter of history, when I started with the legislature in the mid-'80s, there was a research office, and then it was abolished. Then when I started with the Chancellor's office, in the mid to late 90s, we in fact had what we called the Faculty Information Team. And that team we compiled, we kind of convened a group of faculty from the institutions to serve as a resource to legislators during session to answer those kind of quick questions. And questions would come through us and we'd distribute them out and get a very quick response. With budget cuts, of course, those types of services were suspended. As I said, this is a very sound idea. And as Representative Shields indicated, we do have some concerns about the fiscal impact to this. The resolution as it stands today requires us or directs us to do a review of this as an option for the legislature. I would be very irresponsible if I didn't mention that we are concerned with the growing number of task forces and reviews that we are being asked to conduct through this 2009 legislative session. They are starting to add up. We cannot quantify how much this would be. We can't even really determine the scope of work that it would take. But we do know that the Chancellor's Office, the university system, is currently facing approximately 30% budget reduction, and we are scrambling to try to find a way to do that and still serve our students to accomplish the mission of the university system. As you also know, the legislature has created in statute, the legislature specifically created two research institutes, the Institute for Natural Resources and the Climate Change Institute. Both of those institutes are facing significant budget cuts. And the concern that I raise today is if you do create such a policy institute, the funding is very necessary for the success and the viability and the integrity of the research institute. My writing's looking like a blur, so let me put my glasses on here. I will only say that the university system, our mission is to serve the students primarily. But historically, we've had three elements of the service that we provide to the state. We educate citizens. We educate Oregonians. We also do conduct research, which is very critical to the state and its economy and its ability to compete. And we also provide public services. There are a vast number of public service institutes within our institutions today. Population Research Center, I could just name a number of them, that are all today facing significant budget cuts. We're reducing our service to the state to, rather than the three service areas I just named, to two, research and students. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I indicated, this is laudable. This is very necessary for the legislature. We understand the challenges that you face in coming to sound policy decisions. You need that research. We're just very concerned that it's properly funded and properly structured. If we do conduct a review as directed by the resolution, it will take staff time. And right now we are understaffed and facing significant staffing shortages. We'd be happy to continue to work with the sponsors of the resolution, with this body, to find a way to provide that service to you, whether it's through the university system, whether through it's a private institution, or whether through it's an independent entity. We'd be happy to continue those discussions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pinero, you mentioned the body had been tossing things your way throughout the legislative cycle. I think I understood that you don't have a fiscal on this particular package, but you did mention the term, it is adding up. Can you quantify it is adding up? Can you give us any idea when you say that the burdens placed on you are adding up, what the cost of that is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I sure wish I could. The fiscal impact statements from the Legislative Fiscal Office comes through my office. I'm drowning in them today, and it's majorly due to your timelines and your deadlines. I understand that, and it should probably wane as the weeks go on. However, I just kind of did a really quick scan this morning because I went home very stressed last night about how we're going to be able to provide you the fiscal impact statements and the time in which you need them in order to make decisions. And thank goodness the Legislative Fiscal Office has come up with this a new methodology, and that is to indicate a minimal, at least. We can't quantify it. It's indeterminate. We don't know yet, but we know it's going to cost something, probably not as much as I think the $50,000 threshold for a fiscal, but we know it's going to be there. And the reason we were told by Legislative Fiscal Office that they had changed that process was so that they can start identifying them, at least flagging those, for the Ways and Means Committee when we get further along in the session and they start looking at our budgets. They can look over that and say, well, this is what we've passed, these are the bills that we've passed, and they've each had a minimal. I would love to be able to quantify them. And we have learned a lesson. I believe that in the upcoming sessions, we will try to create some methodology to actually estimate a fiscal impact of such things as task forces.
Just a brief follow-up.
Absolutely.
You can answer this in as few words as it works for you, or a number. Approximate how many of the proposals you have before you that kept you awake last night. How many items are there that you need to provide a fiscal for?
Oh, 75.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of this witness? Thank you very much
Thank
for being here.
Thank you very much
here.
For your time.
I don't see anyone else
to
speak to this, so we will close our public hearings on House Bill 2943 and HGR 53. And just so people know, I will be looking and talking to a few of you as time goes on about whether we are looking at moving these, whether we should look at just having an interim work group out of this place work on this kind of stuff. One thing or the other between now and Friday. We are planning on scheduling a meeting for next Friday because one of the bills, 2619, which had to do with the bidding, just to bring you up to date on that, the bid for this year's is already out, so it's done. But the bill, the way it's written, would indicate if we passed it, would say that the next time, the next session, we would start bidding it if we passed it as it is. My intention is to do so. We don't have the fiscal. Obviously, there's a lot of them there, so we can't move the bill today. So I am putting it on the schedule, and we will have a schedule for next Friday, and it will be there for a work session. We may have one of or both of these on work sessions for the same reason, either to make sure that we move them or make a decision on how we're going to work on it. So any questions or thoughts about that one? Okay. I was hoping we'd have the fiscal for 2619. We got it in, asked a request earlier, but there's a lot of them happening right now. So we understand that, and we have a chance next Friday. So with that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2440. We'll have a short explanation, and Representative Thatcher, if you want to move forward, that would be great.
And you, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2440 creates the position of Director of Legislative Audit Office and authorizes the position to hire professional and clerical staff. It designates the Joint Legislative Audits Committee as the appointing body for the director. It specifies membership of the Joint Legislative Audits Committee. It transfers responsibility for maintaining government waste hotline from the Secretary of State, where it currently resides, to the Director of the Legislative Audit Office created by the measure. The measure transfers authority to conduct performance and management audits of state agencies and programs, as well as state-funded programs, from the Secretary of State to the Director of the Legislative Audit Office. This measure has an emergency clause that would take effect upon signature by the Governor, and it has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
We are excited to have both of you here to testify.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Nice to be on the other side of the panel here. Colleagues, thank you for hearing House Bill 2440. I am here in very strong support of this particular piece of legislation. Just in the last couple of years, we've heard numerous stories about performance issues, transparency issues, and what might be described as shaky budgeting issues throughout our state. Some of the items that might fall under that category would include the conditions at the Oregon State Mental Hospital, the data center, where, as the Oregonian reported, the state can't measure how well it performed, corruption, as reported at the River Bend facility, student performance lagging behind the rest of the nation, as measured, and uninvestigated complaints at the Board of Nursing. Yet these are things that were brought to light by private citizens, reporters, and in some cases, the government itself stumbled upon them. But imagine how many other situations are out there where money isn't being wisely spent, performance isn't meeting expectations, legislative intent isn't being implemented, and work on behalf of Oregonians simply is not getting done. The legislature, being a co-equal branch of government with the executive branch, is supposed to be a co-equal branch. The idea that this body, you and I, colleagues, and the rest of our colleagues in the House and Senate are supposed to write the very budgets we deal with for tens of billions of dollars, yet doing that with that responsibility, we have no audit authority over how those budgets are implemented, to me is simply mind-boggling, almost shameful. To leave all auditing authority to the very branch of government on which those audits are supposed to be conducted doesn't make sense to me. It simply would not work that way in private industry. Who would be satisfied if we left the auditing of private corporations up to the very corporations being audited? No one. That's why corporations have outside auditing firms. The need for greater auditing is acknowledged even by our own agencies themselves. Senate Bill 537 was introduced this session by the Senate Committee on Education and General Government. It allows the Oregon Department of Education to enter into contracts for auditing the business practices of school districts. A legislative audits office could do the following things. As an example, in 2007, the state of Washington's audit office issued 400 recommendations to the legislature that would generate $3.19 billion in savings over a five-year period. 400 recommendations, $3.19 billion in savings over that 5 years. The cost? Just under $9 million. Spending $9 million to save $3.19 million seems like a fair rate of return. Colleagues, to me, I can't understand how we cannot afford to implement our own audits office and gain a level of control necessary for good government. Thank you.
Representative Thatcher. And we'll ask questions for both afterwards.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kim Thatcher, representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And you are reminding me, Mr. Chair, that today's Friday with that bag of chocolate sitting in front of you. Thank you very much. I keep staring at it. It only makes sense that we have a way to keep track of the billions of dollars that we are in charge of allotting to agencies and not just waiting for another agency to do occasional performance audits, but to have the ability to be more hands-on and be directly involved in monitoring the way these tax dollars are being used. Are we getting the most bang for our buck? We should be finding that out. House Bill 2440 would give legislators more direct oversight of some of these agencies and perhaps catch some of the mismanagement that good representatives talked about. By way of background, I have served on the House Government Accountability and Information Technology Committee for the past couple of years, and we worked very hard to drill down to some of the very issues we're talking about today. As a result of some of that work, we passed Senate Bill 1039 in the 2007 session, it passing 59-1 in the House. And I'm talking about the Committee on Performance Excellence, but that eventually was vetoed by the governor. So we fixed the concerns, repassed a similar bill, which was House Bill 3613, in the special session last year. The Committee on Performance Excellence was an excellent first step. Doesn't get us where we need to be, though, with an ongoing office for legislative audits and the professional staff necessary to get it done. In the 05-07 interim, the Public Commission on the Legislature also recognized the gap in the system and put on its final list of recommendations creation of a legislative research office which could look at the performance of state agencies and their budgets. House Bill 2440 is not new, but it has gained in importance as the state budget becomes more complex and we discover more and more instances where this kind of auditing function would have been helpful. This concept has been worked on for the past three, I believe, legislative sessions. We've done our homework. We've looked at other states. Oregon appears to be the only state without any kind of auditing office in the legislative branch. In fact, there's even a National Association of Legislative Auditors, and they allow our Secretary of State to join as an honorary member, not as a regular member like everyone else. Now, that leads us to the current authority for performance audits. In the state constitution, Article 4, Section 2, it says the duties of the Secretary of State, and I'll read what it says, even though it refers to a he rather than a she in this case. It says, he shall be, by virtue of his office, auditor of public accounts and shall perform such other duties as assigned him by law. As assigned by law. That is the most important part. We make the law. We are the legislators. We can delegate this authority to the Secretary of State or whomever. We can delegate authorities. We can also take them back. So looking at ORS 297210 sub 1, it says the Secretary of State shall have, this is where we're delegating this authority, the Secretary of State shall have the accounts and financial affairs of agencies of the state reviewed or audited as the Secretary of State considers advisable or necessary. There's nothing in the law that gives the Secretary of State the sole authority to do performance audits. There's also opinions from the Attorney General saying the Secretary of State can do performance audits where necessary. The current law only points to the financial affairs of the state and financial auditing. Now, there's also supposed to be a joint legislative audits committee, which by statute screens the work of the Secretary of State Audits Division's work plan and provides input on the audits. And perhaps maybe you'd be in a better position to tell me why we don't have this committee right now, because I don't think it has met since the end of 07, the 07 session. Now I'm going to talk about money for a little bit. If we transfer the duties of only the performance audit portion of the Secretary of State, we'd be looking at less than half the current agency. There are 72 positions in the audits division with a budget of $14.6 million, or around 45% of that work is dedicated to performance audits. Now, I handed out a list of the performance audits, well, actually, and financial audits on this chart here, that they've conducted in the past 2 years, and the bulk of the work is financial audits. There were 37 performance audits out of that list, and that's around 17 per year, or if you go by staff ratio, it means about one staff person worked on one audit over the past two years, just to break down the division of workload for you. We know that staff can work, has worked on several projects, but that's just breaking it down. Finally, to be clear, this is absolutely not about politics. It's about what makes sense, and it's about what's best for managing our tax dollars. A new legislative audits committee and audits office can establish measurable outcomes and goals, can help us as a legislature make government work better and smarter for Oregon, and can help us be better watchdogs of the taxpayers' money. That is our duty. And in addition to rooting out any potential problems, we can also look for programs that are working and try to replicate them, duplicate those systems. Wouldn't it be nice to open up the morning paper someday and hear about something going right and improving? And I think that would be great to read, and I would like to encourage us to go that direction and make a positive change in the lives of Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either of these witnesses?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Actually, two questions. One of Representative Hannah. I just wanted to clarify the numbers that you shared earlier about, let's see if I find them now, the savings. You said it was 3 point. Uh-huh. I see you were saving $9 million, or it cost $9 million to save $3.19 billion for what was happening in. And that was in Washington? Was that what that was?
Mr. Chair, if I might, I believe I was remiss in identifying myself. For the record, I'm Bruce Hanna, State Representative, House District 7. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. That's correct. This is from the Washington State Audits Office. Number of recommendations was 400. Cost savings over a five-year period was $3.19 billion. The actual audit cost was $8,898,050, but roughly, and $9
million. It's healthy.
And then I'll do a follow-up on that one.
Okay, go ahead.
And that has to do, you called that the state audits. Is that a legislative audit branch, or is that a Secretary of State in Washington?
It is a Washington State auditor, so it is part of the legislative branch.
It is part of the legislative branch. Okay. We'll check on that. Okay.
Yeah, so, Mr. Chair, that almost kind of follows into the same. Appreciate your question.
Mr. Olson.
That follows into kind of a question then to Representative Thatcher then for what she mentioned, that she said it appears that Oregon's the only state now in the country that does not have. So, I mean, when you were checking on that, did you get a chance maybe to even see what the percentage was of cost? Like what we've just seen with Washington?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, just looking at who has an office to begin with, it appears I cannot find anywhere, looking around the building here or looking online, looking at this particular association of National Association of Legislative Auditors, there is nothing for Oregon. There's nothing for Oregon. And like I said, we have to have the Secretary of State be an honorary member just to have some representation for Oregon on this association. So it's kind of interesting. And I did not see a list of numbers as to what has been saved. That would change, obviously, from time to time, but it just goes without saying that the legislature is in the position to be the watchdog of the taxpayers' dollars, and we can't watch very well if we aren't given some authority and some staff to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might follow up just on a point of that as well. Some might say you're trying to create a new idea or a new process within the state. The fact is, the state of Oregon clearly believes in the audit process. Mm-hmm. And to my point, as an example, the insurance division
routinely and on a scheduled effort audits insurance companies. I mean, just as one example, but we ourselves as a state government routinely audit private industry for which we regulate. So the concept of auditing, looking for error, looking for savings, looking for how to do things better, isn't new to the state of Oregon. We currently do it, and my point about the legislative branch being co-equal is pretty clear. We're creating these budgets. We should have the opportunity to audit them.
So I guess my other question would be, I can hear a number of my constituents saying, oh, there they go again, making more bureaucracy. A whole new office. They've already got an office that does it. Why do they need this new office? And so now we're going to have both groups auditing because the Constitution says the Secretary of State will audit, and now they're taking on and doing auditing too. So we didn't get rid of anything. We just grew government one more time. Any answer to that?
Well, yes, absolutely. One of the ideas, obviously, is not creating a new office, but having this office be a part of the legislative fiscal office so that you aren't creating an additional bureaucracy. The other piece of it is to eliminate a portion of what is currently in the Secretary of State's office and transfer that effort and FTE to the new office. It's not my belief that you need to grow government in any way, shape, or form in order to adequately perform this task.
And Mr. Chair, I would like to add to that. We are doing a number of similar type things, maybe not from one branch of government to another, but we are shifting, say, the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business from the Department of Consumer and Business Services over to another area within the OECDD. And we are looking at, I've seen bills to transfer the responsibilities of the construction board over to DCBS. I mean, we're just kind of shifting things around, making where it makes sense. And it makes sense, perfect sense, to have performance audits taken from the Secretary of State and put over here. Not to say that the Secretary of State couldn't overlap while doing financial audits, overlap some into the area of performance audits while doing so. You know, keeping that constitutional duty of doing the financial audits. But it makes sense for us to have the performance audits over here.
So part of the question, when Representative Hanna, when you were speaking of, we have a lot, like our insurance division audits these others. They're doing mostly financial audits, not really performance audits and those kinds of, when they're auditing a business. In general, it's their finances more than it is their performance. When our different agencies are out investigating business, it's mostly financial audits. This is a separate auditing function that we're looking at doing for the legislature, which is how do we get better as performance audits. Is that fair to say?
I would say specific to insurance, obviously there are actuarial issues they're dealing with besides simply financial. So if you go to banking audits, primarily you're dealing with financial, but the idea that performance audits would be specific to certain agencies outside of a fiscal audit seemed to make sense. And I believe by moving that audits office within the legislative fiscal office, you have some synergies that work.
Okay.
Just one other question, Mr.
Representative Olson.
And I guess Representative Hanna, it would be for you. It's my understanding that the audits office in Washington is under the executive branch. But
legislative.
Okay. I thought it was under the executive branch. But anyways, my point being is I can really see where it would be very effective to be under the legislative body.
No, I think that's what makes, excuse me, Mr.
Okay, no problem, please.
Thank you. I believe that's what gives them the opportunity to be as effective as they have been.
Okay.
Is they are under the direction of and work cooperatively with their counterpart, much like ours would be the legislative fiscal office, and have access to that same resource base, and I would say work cooperatively with them. And, here we have BAM, Budget and Office of Management,
I can't tell you the name of their agency, but it's that interaction between the two under the direction of the legislature that I believe gives them their effectiveness.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Comp.
Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in having some sort of additional information about individual agencies, how many, because the Department of Education used to do performance audits. I don't know if they're still at that capacity or not, but I mean, I think there's a range of audits that occur, but I'm not familiar with the depth and the range of those audits.
Okay. Thank you, and we'll look into some of that. So, any further questions for these two witnesses?
Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from the Audits Division?
We are going to hear from Secretary of State's office. I want to thank both of you for bringing it forth today, and I think it's been a good conversation to this point. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And next, Barry Pack from the Secretary of State's office.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State, and I've brought with me today Will Garber, who is the Deputy Director of our Audits Division, chiefly involved with our performance auditing. He's my technical expert, should you have questions about what we do. Before I speak to the bill, I wanted just to clarify for the committee what is the situation in Washington. Washington State actually has two auditing functions. There is a legislative audits office called JLARC, I think it's the Joint Legislative Audits Review Committee, and then there is an elected independent statewide auditor, that's Brian Sontag currently, that has the constitutional authority to audit in that state. And just in 2006, I believe, there was a statewide initiative in Washington, I-900, which took a portion of the state sales tax to fund increased audit capacity within the state auditor's work. So a lot of some of what you're hearing coming out of the state of Washington is a result of that increased capacity in the state auditors versus what's happening with the legislative audits group. But the two do coordinate and communicate their work.
Do you know the status at national Washington, D.C., whether the auditing function is in the executive or the legislative branch? We understand it's legislative now, but Representative Anderson.
Yeah, perhaps Mr. Garber could...
Chair Roblin, for the record, my name is Will Garber. I'm Deputy Director at the Audits Division. Yeah, the Government Accountability Office is the main auditing function at the federal level. It's actually part of the legislative branch.
Right. Thank you. Mr. Peck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments today are really focused on the impact, the potential impact this bill might or might not have on the Secretary of State's Audits Division, not on the relative merits of whether the legislature should have its own audits function. I think that Representative Hanna made some very good points about why that might be something that you should consider and take a look at. House Bill 2440 establishes a legislative audit office and repeals statutory authority for the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits. Now, with all due respect to the sponsors of the bill, we believe that that's a little bit problematic. The Oregon Constitution establishes the Secretary of the State as the auditor of all public accounts, and over a period of the last several decades, the Attorney General, many attorneys in general, has issued a series of formal opinions analyzing that constitutional authority and has concluded that by virtue of this constitutional designation, the Secretary of State is the exclusive auditor of public accounts. And the Attorney General's opinion state that the legislature may neither limit the scope of the Secretary's audit authority nor delegate any aspect of that authority to another agency or branch of state government. Now, that's not to say that the legislature can't do its own auditing. It just can't supplant or replace the authority of the Secretary of State. In reaching this conclusion, the Attorney General looked beyond just the plain language of the Constitution and analyzed the territorial statutes that were in place when the Constitution was drafted and ratified. And those acts state that the auditor of public accounts' responsibilities are to include in reports to the legislature such recommendations deemed, and I'm going to quote now, expedient for the support of public credit, for lessening the public expenses, for using public money to the best advantage, for promoting frugality and economy in public offices, and generally for the better management and more perfect understanding of the fiscal affairs of the state. And this is precisely what the Secretary of State and the Audits Division have been doing for the last 150 years through the conduct of financial performance and program audits. The Secretary of State's Audits Division is independent from the legislature and the rest of the executive branch, and I think that's an important thing to consider. And we follow national standards that require this independence from the process, programs, and accounts that we audit. We're routinely peer-reviewed, and thus federal and state agencies can rely on our work, reducing the need for outside audits. We believe that performance audits are a critical function of our auditing, and even more important in these economic times, we must make sure the public is getting the most bang for their taxpayer buck. And the work of our auditors is key to improving public accountability, and we remain committed to doing just that. And I'm happy to answer any questions, as is Mr. Garber.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Maurer.
Several questions. One, are you members or are we members of the National State Auditors Association?
Yes, we are.
And are you? Do you get their little letter every year saying that you've meet their criteria and are the compliance standards by the NSAA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, we do.
Okay.
And we are peer reviewed. I think every 3 years.
Is it 3 years? Okay. And so, I mean, in your charge, one of your charges is essentially to save money for the state. You know, look for waste or non-compliance of an agency to save money. And how do we what's the follow-up with when you find something? You know, I read one of your performance audits, the last one that was put out, and the question, you know, the agency, or it was DAS, Enterprise Security Office Review, and DAS didn't agree with all your findings. And so what happens? What now? What's the next step?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, the follow-up depends on the agency that was audited and the type of audit it was. In some cases where we're doing routine annual fiscal audits, we'll be following up with them every year to see how they're doing on the recommendations and the findings that we found. On some of these other audits where it's a more risk-assessed-based determination of how soon we come back to them, we do follow up with them, I think, 6 months. Between 6 months to a year, and ask for their for a report on how they are following our recommendations or implementing our recommendations. But we are reliant on agency participation to give us that information. And while we have the constitutional authority to audit, we don't have the authority to require agencies to follow our recommendations. We just encourage them.
Right. I can appreciate that position. The Constitution requires that the Secretary of State have essentially the audits function, but the Constitution doesn't say we have to fund it. And so, you know, de facto, the legislative branch could, you know, dissolve that division probably with some gnashing of teeth. But, I mean, that is within our purview to do it. I'm not suggesting we do that, per se, but...
Thank you, Mr.
at all, I'm not suggesting we do it. But it doesn't prohibit us, legislative branch, from also taking on this role.
Representative Meyer, that's correct, yes.
Okay.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Secretary of State's office is still part of the executive branch, is it not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, yes, it is part of the executive branch, but it is not subject to the direct authority of the governor. For instance, in cases of our budget, in working with Department of Administrative Services, as a constitutional office, we sort of exist in this odd legal land, sort of this island in the executive branch.
Follow up. So you indicated your independence. Describe that independent function as it applies to the auditing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think how I would best describe it is that because the governor, who is the overall
runs the
chief
executive branch, right?
The executive branch has limited authority over our operations as a constitutional agency and officer, we aren't quite as subject to authority and therefore the idea of pressure as, say, an agency internal auditor may at times feel.
Thank you. I want to follow up with an additional question.
Sure.
So quite as still indicates there's a pretty tight link there to me, and that's just my perception. I indicated in my testimony some of the highlighted, obviously I picked out the big stuff, but it was big. Could you just indicate for us maybe over that same time year period that I was referencing some of the, just the headliner major savings that the audits division has
Mr.
found?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, if I can defer to Will to take a stab at that. I'm not sure we have that information right at hand, but we could provide it to you.
Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, unfortunately I don't have those statistics in front of me. One of the statistics we do track, though, as a performance measure is the dollar savings we return for the amount of money we spend on audits. And that has fluctuated a little bit over the years, but it's always been positive. I'm going to take a guess here, and I think it's roughly around $7 return for $1 spent in recent time, but I need to check up to get you a precise answer on that. It's always been positive, I know that.
Okay, and finally, last question, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Given the state of our economy today in Oregon and the budget discussions that the legislature is having, and given the fact that you are independent, certainly you've been watching this. I mean, you know where we're at. Could you describe for us, if you have, significantly, I mean, doubled your efforts, tripled your efforts at auditing to help us find the kind of savings I'm talking about? Could you describe what you've done to significantly increase the audit function hunting for those savings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think how I could best answer that question is first to recognize that the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, and I have been relatively new to this job in office. We've been here for about 4 months. So I can speak to that, and then I can turn it over to Mr. Garber about prior histories. But I will say a couple of things. One, performance auditing in particular was one of the prime motivating reasons why the Secretary ran for this office and is a top priority for her in the office. We did make some change in leadership of the Audits Division when she took office. We have an interim director at this point in time, and June 1, Gary Blackmer, who is the current elected city auditor for the City of Portland and a national performance audit expert, will be taking over as director of the Audits Division. In this interim period, one of the things that our interim director is doing is working on productivity and cycle time issues so that we can understand that with limited resources and limited staff, increase our capacity to do audits so that we can find the savings, find efficiencies, and identify best practices better and more quickly and in more volume. Do you want to add anything?
Representative Roblin, Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, I just might add that we do have a process that we follow about once a year for collecting a whole number of topics that we would consider to audit, and then we sort of vet those topics using different criteria. And the prime one that we use is the potential for dollar savings or revenue enhancements, and that hasn't changed really since I've been at the Audits Division, and I came in 2000. It's always been a high priority for us.
I know I said it was the last one, but if you'll just bear with me.
Okay, yes, Representative Hanna, one more question at least.
Yeah, that's what you said. I won't say the last one, but maybe I'll just make it as a statement and a request.
Okay.
I didn't hear an answer to my question, and I know I'm putting you in a tough place here, and I appreciate that, but I didn't hear you say, because the legislative branch is in fiscal turmoil, because we are purportedly $4.5 billion upside down, I did not hear you say we're doing 50% more audits yet. I heard you say you're trying. I heard you say there's a process. But I didn't hear you say we're doing more audits today than we were 90 days ago or 180 days ago. I didn't hear that. And second, I haven't yet heard, as I described the new audits office as it has functioned in Washington, I haven't heard you tell us we've found billions of dollars. And the reason I'm pointing to that is, and you said you could get the data, and you said there's a positive return, and thank you for that. I appreciate it, and I know the audit function is a difficult and tedious function. But what we're talking about here is one of the worst fiscal crises in the state, and you are saying you're charged with that effort. And yet, I can't hear you say, if I was in the auditor's division and I had saved $1 billion and a legislator was asking me the question, I'd be saying, I've saved you billions of dollars. So when you're saying to me, I got to go back and look at the number, I'm sort of guessing it's not going to be billions. Just because if I knew I had saved billions, I'd be looking up here at this panel saying, I've saved billions. So my request is, we do get the number and we find out how many audits have been done on average over the last 2 or 3 years, how much you've driven the capacity to do additional new auditing. And colleagues, what I would say is, this bill says, under the direction of the legislature, we go out and hunt and search and work through this process. If it's a dual process with the Secretary of State's office, I'm okay with that. But I believe this bill creates an opportunity for the legislature to drive its own audits function, and I think it's critical that we move forward with it.
And I do have a question. Have we ever set up a system with the state and the audits division whereby if you saved X number of dollars, that in the next budget cycle you get to retain a portion of that to do more audits? Have we ever given you an incentive from the legislature to have more money to do the audits that shows that if you have in fact saved money, we should be able to use some of that savings to pass on to the audits division to go after more? Have we done that at any point? And
Mr. Chair, no. There have been conversations in the past that I'm aware of and have participated in varying capacities about the idea of creating either a granting pool where if agencies identify savings or we identify savings, that it goes into the pool and they can be reinvested so that there's an incentive to state agencies to find efficiencies and find savings, but that has never happened to my knowledge. Washington State has a similar program. I believe that Governor Locke began and Governor Gregoire has continued.
My other question goes back to a statement you made earlier, and that is that in Washington, the citizens, by initiative, gave more money to the auditing division so that they would do more audits, basically. We haven't had that situation at this point.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And do you know, percentage-wise, how much that would have been increase in their budget as opposed to what we would need to do an increase in our budget? Bigger state, so I don't expect the same number of dollars.
Mr. Chair, it's been a while since I looked at what the initiative funded, but I want to say it was in the tens of millions of dollars of additional funding. It was a percentage of their state sales tax, which is fairly large.
And last one I go before I ask a couple others, it has to do with the understanding more clearly today than I had a week ago of the different parts of the executive branch and their constitutional differences. So working on another bill, 2500, it became clear to me that the executive branch is not, quote, the executive branch, that there is the executive branch governor. There is the executive branch constitutionally treasurer. There is the governor, the executive branch constitutionally secretary of state, all of whom have different portions of responsibilities set forth in the Constitution. And clearly, they each feel the same way about holding on to their constitutionally protected differences. So kind of was where Representative Hanna had spoken about executive branch, legislative branch. I know we're a little different than the Senate and they're the House, but I didn't quite understand that until my conversations in the last couple of weeks. And Thatcher is smiling in the back because she found the same instance. And we actually had to put a special little statement into our last bill to make sure that we kept that codified. So I do recognize that they are different parts of the executive branch in our state. So I appreciate that. Representative Maurer.
So if I were to say that I know of a particular program that spends 40% of its entire budget that is specifically to provide services on administration. And they're skipping, picking daisies down the mall here and are happy with that. Would that be something that you would act on? Would you act on something like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, yes. We welcome input from the legislature on what topics, what agencies we should be looking at. We would balance that with a risk assessment on everything else that we're looking at, but absolutely, we have not met with the Joint Legislative Audits Committee for some time now, and we would welcome that continuing conversation.
Right. And do you focus on other fund, on general fund, or how do you prioritize?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, it depends, again, on the audits. A lot of our audits are statutorily required or are federal compliance audits, and so they look across the board, or either at federal funds or at general funds or at other funds. We just, as you may know, completed our statewide single audit, which looked at a lot of fund sources. In the performance auditing side, I would hazard to guess that it's more generally focused on general fund programs.
And last but not least, the financial audits to me are very strict. I mean, the GASB and 38 or I don't know, but GAAP, and they're very regular. But performance audits are not. Performance audits can be creatures of the entity doing it. I mean, there's clearly some standards, but performance audits really, I think, get to the heart of what we're talking about. And do you think you folks do a good job of performance audits?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I do. I think that there is always room for improvement in any office and in any function, and we are going to continue to look at that. But there are standards, even for performance audits. We follow the Yellow Book standards. So while there is, I guess you could say, a little more flexibility in the audit, there are still standards that must be followed, and we follow those to ensure that we continue to be certified, that we continue to have good peer review, and so that the federal government in particular knows that when they see our audit, they can trust that it's being done according to those standards and that the federal dollars are being spent the way they say they should be. That makes sense.
It does. So
rambled for a minute.
So you're in a lot of ways you're focused on the performance audits are focused on meeting federal requirements, because I understand when we get money from the feds, there are a lot of strings, and those strings, if not followed correctly, can result in loss of substantial amount of money. So is that a focus?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I think I may have misspoke or gave you a misimpression that, and I'm going to now punt to Mr. Garber to help me clear this up for you. The federal requirements and the compliance that's so important, you're absolutely right. It is important that we follow the strings, that we're reporting accurately, that the accounting is all correct, so that those federal dollars continue to flow to the state, including all the stimulus dollars. What I was trying to say is that our performance audits we do to the standards, because we have to. If you don't follow the standards, then other agencies and other governments aren't going to trust that all of your auditing is accurate. So I think I misled you, but Will, can you?
Chair Roblin, Representative Maurer, the federal compliance work we do, we consider part of our financial audit work. So the things that Mr. Pack was describing are part of the financial portion of our work. When we do the performance audit work, sometimes we do indeed end up essentially auditing federal dollars. Programs at DHS, as I'm sure you know, are part state funded, part federal funded. But the focus in the past has really been on primarily on trying to fund general fund savings. I mentioned before that a lot of our focus was trying to return savings or revenue enhancements. And when we look for those audits, it's primarily general fund dollars we're looking for, some other fund. There are exceptions, but primarily general fund.
Mr.
Just one really very simple question.
Mr. Nandia Olson.
And Barry or Willie, one of you, and probably more likely for you, well, since you've been there since 2000. Does your office have designed outcome measurements?
Chair Roblin, Representative Olson, of our own?
Yes.
Oh, yes, we do. We do have our own performance measures that we track every year.
And you can tell me what the outcomes are right now,
well,
of what you're planning to do with those. Now, I'm not talking specifically just measurements. I'm talking about if we give you this, this is what you're going to get in return.
Chair Roblin and Representative Olson, yeah, I do believe we can say that. Now, the reason that I hesitated a bit is because we've struggled a little bit working with Legislative Fiscal Office on coming up with what is really a pure outcome measure. But if you were to say, what are you going to return to me if we give you this money? I would tell you the things that we would produce, and they would be audit reports, they would be savings, they would be recommendations in those reports, and the end result, we would hope, would be savings and improvement in government.
Well, see, then that gets back to a question that Representative Hanna was trying to pop out earlier. So, okay.
And I guess the final comment I'm going to make, did you?
Well, no.
Yeah, okay.
Well, a comment, though?
Yes.
Because what... when I saw this list, I was wondering about your criteria, but through the conversation here, I've kind of fused together how you, I think you come up with your criteria, which I think that's would be, well, I was curious, like, well, do you have set criteria for each, let's say, each biennium that you're working towards, again, like the outcomes. So, but I do appreciate your time and sharing your information today.
And I guess my final comment is that...
interesting.
I would love to have the, and this might be hard because it's all executive branch, you do an audit and you recommend some things to another department, and they choose, they say, yeah, it's a good idea, we'll do that. They choose not to do some others. I would love the report that says, here's what they chose to do, here's what they chose not to do, so that we could make a decision whether we should support you by not funding them if they don't go. I mean, I think there has to be... a place where the recommendations get acted on in good faith with the legislature. So somehow to work that relationship, whether it continues to be just with the Secretary of State's office and their audit division or not, is something I would hope we continue to work on. Because if you're going to make recommendations and we see the opportunity for savings, we want to make sure that we help those recommendations get put in place. Personally, other people have to speak for themselves on that one, but from my perspective, somehow we work that out would be helpful. So,
Mr. Chair, if I may, part of Initiative I-900 in Washington State was the requirement that after the release of a report, within 30 days, the agency is to hold a public hearing to discuss the recommendations and their steps to implement them.
That's
food
a
for thought.
Good deal.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you having this conversation, and I think it's been enlightening to have the Secretary of State's office here and the audits folks. To me, it has given us all a bit of an education, number one. Number two, and to our committee administrator, I hope we could request from the agency, because Representative Maurer asked a question, if a member of the legislature requested an audit, I heard a willingness to do that, but that interdependence between the legislative branch and the executive branch, and then the Secretary of State's office in its constitutional place within the executive branch, I'd like to understand if a member of the legislature wrote a letter requesting, could give some pertinent background and said, here's why this agency needs to be audited. And the Secretary of State's office looked at it and said, you're not our part of government, so never mind, which I believe there is that definition right now. They could just say, that's not really our deal. We don't work for you, I think. And I'd like to understand what that same relationship would be if the executive branch office wrote that same request, if the Secretary of State's office would have the same authority to say, no, we don't believe that's valid either, and we're not going to do that. Because, again, I believe this bill focuses on why the legislature should have an audits office. I think these people are providing a service that is necessary, but until I'm convinced otherwise, I still believe it is for the executive branch. At the direction of, and under the direction of the executive branch, it is not at our... like one of us could walk down the hall to legislative fiscal and see one of the legislative fiscal officers and request information, they would accommodate that information and say, you bet, I'm going to find it within schedule.
Right.
I don't believe that same relationship exists, and I'd like to. I'm pleased you came today because I'd like to figure that out, and I think it again points at a bright light why this type of legislation and a separation of those duties is important.
Thank you very much. Any further conversations? There was no one else on the list to speak, so thank you very much. And we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2440. Is there anything else to come before the group? I see nothing. We will try to get a work schedules committee for next Friday, since that's the last day that we can work them in this house. If we have to move something to another place, like rules to work it, we'll do that. But so if you have any real angst about things to be worked, let me know between now and then, and we'll figure it out. We will put down for sure our bill on the printing for next. It will be for Friday.
Post it.
It is posted. Okay. Anything else, let me know, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And we will adjourn our House Administration Committee.